Greetings, Growcast listeners worldwide. Jordan River here, back with more Growcast, establishing roots everywhere I go. And today we have a brand new guest. That's right, Jameson Wellborn joins us. This is a really, really deep, storied mind from the cannabis industry, both north of the border and here in the United States. He is a fountain of knowledge, and you're going to love this first appearance by Jameson. Before we jump in with him, though, of course, shout out to Medic. Need a Medic at medicgrow.com. Code GROWCAST for 10% off. Affordable, powerful, efficient bar-style lights. They're Smart Series, of course. Rich is crushing it with them, loving them. Seedco is powered by Medic Grow. High PPF. You got a high UMOL per joule efficiency rating. And best of all, you're going to save hundreds of dollars on the purchase price. You remember that last episode with Shane. He was saying you factor in that purchase price. When you're paying for all that efficiency, you got to beware. How long is that warranty? Are you going to buy new lights in 5 years? There might be a tipping point to that equation. And I'll tell you, Medic Grow really gets that middle of the road, perfect efficiency, perfect PPF, and perfect price point. If you want to save a little bit on the buckage and still get the powerful, efficient LEDs, medicgrow.com. Check out their Fold series. Check out their Smart series. All the statistics. Check out Coco's light review. He loved them over at Coco for Cannabis, of course. Medicgrow.com. Code GROWCAST always. 10% off. And be sure to send us a snapshot of you using our codes to be entered to win free seeds. All right, everyone, let's get into it with our brand new guest, Jameson. Thank you for listening and enjoy the program. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, I always urge you to share the show, spread the show, turn someone on to GrowCast Podcast on Spotify, send them to our website, and check out our membership, growcastpodcast.com/membership, our little secret society of cultivators. Today, we have a brand new guest talking about a topic that we don't really get too much. We're kind of going north of the border, talking about Canadian cannabis, talking about American and Canadian cannabis, so much more. We have on the line brand new guest, Jameson Wellborn. What's up, Jameson?
Hey, how's it going?
Going excellent, man. Going really, really well. We got to speak at the Regenerative Conference a little bit. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we had to have you on air, man. Do you want to...
Hey, thanks so much.
Of course. Yeah, it's really my pleasure. Do you want to, for the first time listeners, tell a little bit about your backstory? What brought you into cannabis and what led you to create the awesome brand that you're currently working on?
Absolutely. I got involved in cannabis from a medical standpoint. I was a really wild child. I had trouble in school. I had trouble sitting still. I had trouble paying attention to things that I didn't want to pay attention to. I wanted to go outside and run around and play. And for that, I got penalized and put on a myriad of different drugs to basically placate me into society and plug me into that square peg, square hole that you needed to sit, you know, a kid to sit through, you know, 6 or 7 hours of a classroom every day, which, you know, for me wasn't right. And so it wasn't until first year university that I really experienced cannabis. I had tried it growing up and got involved with some other things, but for me, cannabis during my formative years, I was an athlete. And it just didn't really, it didn't click for me at all. It was something that I tried a few times and was much more attracted to stimulants than something that made me feel like that. And it was strange that it didn't immediately click for me, but really it was like a lock and key when I went out to university. I went to university in Halifax at Dalhousie. And I remember the first time I tried cannabis out there, it was a different experience. And it was kind of something that I immediately learned to use as a tool to help calm my brain and, you know, was able to study and absorb material better when I was using cannabis. And so that quickly formed into a passion and I started growing and moved into my girlfriend's house and, you know, started growing in her house and rented other houses. And it was a real passion of mine. And I got a lot of, I got so much from it. And then I moved back to Calgary after I finished my degree and kind of came clean to my parents and let them know how I'd been financing my beer money and so on. And, you know, that was 2012. And they my parents are amazing. And they're, you know, super supportive, but they weren't super supportive about that. and so what I ended up doing is, you know, I listened to them and I ended up getting involved in commercial real estate. here in Alberta. And at that time, it was quite a booming market. And I focused on downtown office leasing as well as commercial development. And that really allowed me to cut my teeth in the corporate world. And, you know, that, if anybody knows about commercial real estate, that job really just is a hardcore sales job where you're knocking on doors or picking up phones. And if you're not, you're not eating at the end of the month. And so that really allowed me to cut my teeth and get a good understanding of what that world looked like. And after 4.5 years in it, I was done. I didn't want to be shoulder to shoulder with these people. I didn't identify with these people, and the lifestyle was very unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And so I made the decision to leave, and I sold my book of business to my business partner, and I walked away. And if you know anything about, you know, building a sales pipeline type business, it's like, you know, you don't walk away after 5 years. After 5 years, that's when it just starts getting good.
Right.
And so it was a big decision for me to walk away. And I took a bit of a walkabout, spent some time in Northern Ontario, spent some time in the Caribbean, just kind of getting my head on straight and really figuring out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And, you know, the realization came to me that cannabis has been the only thing that has been consistent throughout, you know, these long periods of my life is mm-hmm. something that, you know, I really resonate with and something that I know I always want to keep around. And I'm the kind of guy that likes large amounts of cannabis around me and, you know, feel uncomfortable when I don't have that. And so I started a consulting company here in Canada. Actually, first I reached out to about 400 different cannabis startups in early 2016 and offered them my skills and told them what I had been doing. And at that time it was basically a Brad and a Chad and a fancy glossy business deck. Like there was no need for any cannabis knowledge. There was no need for any cannabis people.
Right.
And so they were like, hey, well, you know, a few of them. And let me say, I sent out about 400 emails and I got about 14 responses and they were all like, hey, we'll keep your resume on file. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
And so I realized that, you know, I wasn't going to be able to get in like that because it was very much so an old boys club. It was, you know, it was oil and gas guys and Bay Street guys who understood how to put these companies together and raise the money that were, you know, collecting this money and going to start these cannabis businesses. It was by no means traditional market guys.
Yeah.
And so I ended up leveraging my skills in commercial real estate and consulting for a group that was looking to secure a large number of retail locations in central and western Canada. And what had happened was all the large, more well-capitalized retail plays had secured the A and B class brokerage houses on exclusive basis. So anybody else looking to secure retail space was going to have to deal with, you know, lower tier brokerage houses to secure that space for them. And so these companies were dealing with D and C class brokerages. They needed a broker to go in there and kind of herd all these cats and organize all these deals because these deals were long-term lease deals at extremely high rates, but they had to be written carefully because they would be contingent on development permits or contingent on upon granting a license. So
right.
There was some nuancing that needed to be done in writing these leases. And if you don't have a, you know, somebody who understands, you know, lease, the clauses in a lease, then you can get yourself into a bind. So I did that for 3 months and knew that wasn't what I wanted to do. And I needed to get closer to the plant. And I was approached by a small publicly traded company who had just recently got into cannabis and pivoted over through an RTO of a mining company. And they were some individuals who had no real connection or tie to the plant, but they had changed their company from a mining company to a cannabis company, and it had gone from an $8 million valuation to the $220 million valuation overnight. So they said,
Jesus.
Hey, we're cannabis guys. And so they hired me to come on, and my title was Vice President of Business Development. And they were building facilities, extraction and cultivation facilities in British Columbia, Nevada, and California at the time. California had already been built, and Nevada and British Columbia were being built. And these guys were very much happy managing the business from their office here in Calgary. And it was at a time where international travel for Canadian citizens working in cannabis was difficult, much more than it is now.
Right.
And I happen to be a U.S. and Canadian citizen. And so that was my advantage out of the gate. So I immediately became more of an operational guy, where I was flying to these different sites and going to different conferences and meeting,
wow,
you know, large different groups of people. And it really, really springboarded my career in cannabis and gave me a much more global outlook on how things are being done and how things are different in Canada versus Nevada versus California, and just the different climate and the different ways people are talking, and even how conferences are held. And so that was really interesting for me, and really opened my eyes up and grew my network tremendously. But working for those large publicly traded companies really started to make me become very jaded with the industry that I love so, so much. And I started to be less than happy moving these individuals' projects forward. And it was something that I knew I needed to address. And so I ended up parting ways with that group, and I was approached by a gentleman who was building a vertical aquaponic farm in Eastern Canada. He had come from vegetable farming, uh-huh, and he didn't really know much about cannabis other than, you know, he enjoyed to smoke the odd joint, and, you know, some weed tasted like oranges and some weed tasted like earth. And so I was brought on as the biz dev cannabis guy, and quickly laid out a roadmap to build this company up to be a large genetic player in the Canadian space. And in doing so, I was, awarded with the title of co-founder, because I think that the business really pivoted from what he originally envisioned it to what it is now. I mean, it started out in his vision as a vertical aquaponics farm, and now it's a single tier genetic nursery. So I think I had a bit of an influence there. But yeah, that was a really cool experience for me. I ended up moving across Canada and spending 2020 in small town, rural Eastern Canada. And that was a really different experience. It was really cool to get, you know, hands-on starting up a small licensed Canadian entity, going through that process, the genetic declaration and the Health Canada audits and dealing with, you know, security and requirements and security clearances and all those things. It was a really great experience for me. I ended up parting ways with that group. We just kind of had a difference of opinion on how things should move forward. And I, you know, happily bowed out and ended up starting a genetics company with a ex-partner of mine. And we were able to deploy about 60 hunted cuts into the Canadian space and have some been met with a pretty warm welcome, a lot of happy people. Mm. And so that was a really interesting exercise as well. I subsequently parted ways with that group and started my own consulting company and where I represent groups, companies, individuals, or ideas that I think have merit or have been recognized as to deliver quality in certain geographic zones. And I look to leverage those assets and bring them into different geographic zones. So, you know, for example, if I see a brand or an individual who absolutely stands out to me in a Washington market or a California market, I'll approach that individual and say, you know, I'd like to represent your brand and you on an international scale. I don't usually do any paperwork with these guys. It's a handshake. It's a looking in the eye. And trust me, I don't usually do stuff on the phone either. I fly to them and, you know, we chop it up over some weed usually.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, it's you keep doing what you're doing where you're doing it. And then I'm going to take your spirit and your idea and present it in places like Canada, where not only can it have an impact and potential remuneration on Canadian soil, but once you're in Canada, you can go to any country in the world that has a medical system in place federally. So that's been the core focus of my business. And I've really, wow, you know, connected with incredible groups. I work really closely with Emerald Mountain Legacy, which was the first individual that I approached with this opportunity. And, you know, shout out Ben for trusting me and trusting me with Brock's legacy. And you know, I don't take that lightly. And we've been met with you know, a tremendous amount of interest up here for Canadian companies around seed production and co-branding and branding opportunities. And so I really look to do that with more individuals and be a connector in the culture side of this industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I very much see this industry as a line drawn between two sides. I feel as though the people around the plant who are really true to the plant are almost handcuffed because we play with more rules
yes.
than these Chads and Brads. Because, you know, unfortunately, and people don't like to hear when I say this, but like I do say I shit where I eat. You know, like my friends are who I work with. My industry is where my friends are. My
right.
social circle is also my colleagues. You know, and so how I move through this space is, and the rules that I hold myself to are the same rules that I want to hold myself to in life and my peer group. Whereas, you know, these visitors, these Chads and Brads who are purely here to pad their bottom line and get another vacation home, you know, they don't give a fuck what we think about them. And so just by that, they're playing with a different set of rules. Because if I didn't give a fuck about what anybody's thought about me,
yeah.
I could do things a lot differently and make a lot of money in this industry quick and then get the heck out. And that's what happened in Canada. I mean, half the money that we raised for this Canadian industry, it's gone. It's disappeared. And like a large portion of it can't even be accounted for.
Jesus Christ.
You know, what Canadian federal legalization did was it was a very small microcosm of redistribution of wealth, where there was a ton of individuals from Bay Street, which is our Wall Street up here in Canada, and guys from Wall Street who saw the writing on the wall of this nascent booming industry that was booming and bubbling, and they just drove that bubble as big as they could because they made more. Every time an IPO happened, that their money got out before everybody else's money. And so they just made out like bandits.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all completely legal and everything's fine. And then the people who are still in this industry today are left holding the bag with the black eye of, hey, whatever happened to this, whatever happened to that, whatever happened to this. It's like those guys are gone. They're gone to like mining meteorites, like staging money to like mine meteorites. And like I know these guys. These guys were 2 years ago, look me in the whites of my eyes and be like, bro, I bleed cannabis. I'm cannabis for the rest of my life. This plant changed my life. And now they're on to literally mining meteorites. And if you're in the Canadian space, you know exactly who I'm talking about. And then, you know, blockchain on the crypto thing, like that's all cool, but that's not what you guys were saying 2 years ago. 2 years ago, you guys were saying you're going to be here forever to build this industry. And
wow.
So there's just a different set of rules that we as community members play by, and we need to recognize that. But that's kind of the long and I guess the short of my last few years in the cannabis scene. And
jeez,
so I've been privileged to really be able to see both sides of it and the ugly underbelly of it. And, you know, I'm still here and I want to keep connecting individuals. I want to keep talking. I want to keep sharing information. I see a lot of these old, really talented heads just clam up because they get so jaded, and I completely relate with them. But like, I think that that's not how we move forward, because I know that these Chads are calling each other every day, talking, sharing information, what worked against these traditional market guys, what didn't, how best did I fuck this traditional market guy over? How best did I steal this guy's brand? Like, how best did I scoop this guy's deal? Like they talk like that. Like, why? Because I lived it, because I was in it. Like, commercial real estate commended you if you fucked the guy over.
Right.
Like, that was the pinnacle. You would be celebrated and taken out for drinks. So I know this exists. And so if this exists on the corporate side of things, we as the community side of things, we need to communicate just as much, if not more.
Man, I could not agree more. That was a really amazing expose, and it leaves me with a lot of questions. My first one, the kind of side that I'd like to dive into. Again, I think that as the cannabis industry explodes out, there's more contention points within the community. I think we have to stay united. I think divided we fall. I think if we're fighting about lights, I think if we're fighting about nutrients or fucking, you know, organic this or that or breeders,
yep.
this or that, that makes us weaker. And I think that if we
yep.
unite around the plant, it makes us stronger. And united, we're going to be able to withstand these outside forces better. Even the labels of Chads and Brads in this thing, I love how you put it. It seems to me like the major distinguishing factor, because a lot of people will judge you on how your haircut is or what you look like. But it seems to me like
yeah,
the major distinguishing factor
yep.
is Are you in it for the plant and for the community?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, will get you paid. We're not saying there's no money here. It's just, what's your top value? Is money your top value? Because that's a problem. Yeah. If profit is your top value above the patients, the plant, and all of this, that's what I would say is the definable characteristic of this outside entity that we do not recognize. My question to you is, how do we best gird ourselves against this wave of corporate entity? You know, I've heard that it's important for us to kind of team up. There's a lot of these people working together. We need to start working together as legacy cultivators. I've heard a number of different things. I guess I just want to know your opinion, having seen this all go down north of the border. Let's say us down here in America, as we're coming online, how do the legacy cultivators and traditional gardeners protect themselves in this space and be able to carve out a living in the sea of corporations?
We need to recognize our personalities as not as individuals, but as a whole. First of all, you know, touching on what you said about staying together as a group, it's our passion that drives us apart. Like, we care so much that we get to a point where we get so fixed in our views that it's hard for us to even sit beside individuals that care exactly the same but have different views.
Yes.
And so it's about understanding who we are personality-wise as a whole, as a community. And you know, being from the traditional market, we're very much clutch and look, clutch and watch. You know, we don't want to be the first to react.
Right.
And so in Canada, you saw this wave of legalization, and it was ex oil and gas exec after ex oil and gas exec, and there was no one standing up and saying, no, I've been, you know, growing 40 lights for the last, you know, 15 years, and now I'm going to do it in the legal space. Nobody did that initially. It was not a welcoming environment for a traditional market entrant. And
right.
So therefore, no traditional market entrant moved forward for at least, I want to say, 12 months. And I'm sure there's some exception that I'm leaving out, but that's my overview.
Right.
And so I think that creating space for smaller groups is something that's tremendously important. The way that the regulations are written are never written for the smaller group or for the person who's never read regulations before. And really understanding your regulations and how to operate within them, and then sharing that knowledge base to a specific community. And then understanding that what I share to one individual for free, I might charge $400 to another individual, or $1,200, or $1,500 to another individual. You need to know who you're speaking to. Like, I think we as a community only go forward if we recognize that we can only share all the information that we have hard earned to other like-minded individuals.
Right.
Because these business guys, they're not sharing their strategies or what all the things that they've learned in business negotiations through the years with us, but somehow they invite us on a fucking tour of their facility, and we're in there being like, yeah, I raised this financial, like, oh, those drips are too low, and like, you should check those lines, and like, I tell everybody that I meet, like, don't say anything when you tour a facility, because that's, if you're invited to tour a facility, that's why they want you there. They want you there to be like, oh, I fixed this, and oh, this is wrong, and then they get it for free, and then you don't get paid for it, and then you struggle. And so I think that, you know, it really comes back to communication, understanding that there's going to be a corporate side of this. You have to coexist with the Brads and Chads. It's just factual. But if we don't band together, they'll pick us off, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's just communication and sharing of resources. Like, I'm good at reviewing contracts. So I have friends who send me contracts, and I'll give my 2 cents to them. I say, hey, this is what I would do. And you know, I have friends who are way better at washing hash than I am. And I like, come teach me how to wash hash, or wash my hash, or whatever it is. And so, you know, like, it's about community sharing and communication. Like, we as a whole industry have been like, yo, I do my own thing. I don't talk to anybody. I maybe have my 3 good friends, but like, I'm not like openly sharing in the community. And I think that we're slowly getting better at that, but it just has to be like a wider web of how to do it. And people who have done it showing the way. Like, there was an individual that I just had, I do like a resin show on YouTube, and I just had a guy on who left a really well-paying job at a very, very large publicly traded company here in Canada, Like, and he was offered a director role and he walked away because he knew what he wanted to do. And he went and started a chocolate, a really, really high end solventless fine chocolate company.
Oh, nice.
Called Rosinheads. And he basically, he was able to market that, get the products out, get them into the right hands on the traditional market to make noise, and then make enough noise that he leveraged that into a legal market deal. And now he's got a licensing deal in the legal market. And I'm like, let's get this guy on. Let's celebrate him. Let's talk about his path, because this is how you see innovation. Like, you're not going to see innovation through these large cantankerous companies. There's just too many employees. There's too many individuals. Like, most of the marketing teams I talk with are laughable, laughable. And these people are making hundreds of thousands of dollars, the whole team. And because these companies are run by people who don't know cannabis, who don't love cannabis, and who don't regularly use cannabis. And when I say regularly, I don't mean like Friday at your cabin after a long week. I mean regularly, like daily, or have some relationship with this plant.
Throughout the day, maybe.
Then you don't know how to hire. You don't know how to hire for. Like, there are so many people who run cannabis companies who can't tell if a guy is a good grower, because the guy brings a little bit of weed and they go, this looks like good weed. I don't know. It'll get me high. And don't even know to ask any of these probing questions. And that's what I see over and over, is that, you know, these larger groups just are much more hindered by their hiring practices. Because if you talk to a cannabis person and they talk to a non-cannabis person, I mean, it takes about 7 seconds. And I could be like, yeah, you need a bit more time. And so I think that we need to understand where our advantages are. We need to stay small and nimble. Like, changing a company once your company is large is really difficult. And I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of regulation change, especially in the US as things progress. But yeah, like, it comes down to communication and organization. We're not a well-organized community. We need those individuals to stand up and act as organizers and collectors. Like, shout out to Dutch Blooms. Like, Josh Rutherford has done an amazing job bringing a community together through the Regenerative Conference. And I think our community owes a lot to him, because, you know, those things aren't making money. Like, those things aren't pumping dollars. Like, that, he does that out of love for the community. Like, Josh is a connector of people, just like, you know, Steve is, just like so many of us. But it takes a village to kind of communicate everything. So yeah, communication is key, man. Like, and like, sharing in your mistakes. Like, we're also an industry that like only shows our successes. And so, like, coming out and being like, yo, I got burnt. This is how I got burnt. I know I was stupid. I should have never signed that. I should have never gotten business with that guy. I know he's a Chad. Like, I know he's a, like, whatever it is. Like, we have to share that ugly underbelly that we sometimes like are too prideful to share.
That is a really good point, man. Again, I do want to just highlight here, thank you to Potent Ponics and Josh Rutherford, Dutch Blooms, for inviting us down to the Regenerative Conference in Michigan. Ton of fun. Definitely worth attending if it's in your area. And that's where I actually met Jameson. So really, really cool. I do want to mention something, though. You mentioned the YouTube channel. Before we go any further, you want to shout out the name of your show so people can go check it out?
Yeah, absolutely. I do a show called The Fires Fire Show. I do it with a couple of good buddies. And we bring on a guest once or twice a week. And we have a long form discussion around who they are, where they're from, and how that shaped what they're doing today. Usually everyone's a maker, whether it's mostly on the solvent side, but we're starting to get a few other BHO guys. And yeah, it's, you know, we're going to expand to glass blowers and a few breeders soon. I'm going to bring Josh on. So yeah, check it out. It's The Fires Fire Show on YouTube and Instagram. So give it a follow.
Hell yeah, man. You should see a little uptick there. Go and give Jameson a follow, everybody.
Appreciate it.
We'll be right back with Jameson, but before that, gotta tell you about Plant Revolution. You know them, you love them. Great partners of the show. We support Plant Revolution. The original Crobe guys, baby. They have their great white mycorrhiza, water-soluble powder, or, you know, right in the transplant. Just use it. Bam, right in the transplant hole, you're good to go. They've got the liquid orca, a liquid mycorrhiza with a few strains of beneficial bacteria. They've got their king crab full of beneficial bacteria and their mycochum to feed everything. Let me tell you real quick for you DWC growers, I have seen king crab and orca personally change roots in DWC grows. Members in the Order of Cultivation Discord post before and afters, and it completely transformed their roots. I do not understand about the establishment of mycorrhiza in a DWC system on roots. Honestly, it does not make sense to me, but I've seen it with my own eyes. It completely transformed them. It thickened them up into stumps as opposed to long, strangly wizard beards. And I've seen it more than once, too. This is something that people have posted in our Discord before, so really, really cool. Again, the orca and the king crab clean enough to use in a DWC system. I'd be hesitant to add other microbe products. I'd be hesitant to add, you know, like even the mycochum, for instance, because you got to keep it clean. But king crab is super, super clean. People are throwing in that orca too. No problems in the DWC. Use it in soil, use it in cocoa, use it in DWC, whatever you've got, use Plant Revolution products. Find them in your local hydro store. Find them at plantrevolution.com. Great white myco line. We love them. Thank you to Plant Revolution. All right, everybody, let's get back to it with Jameson. I do want to dig into something you said. You know, these regulations that they put in place when there's a high barrier to entry, when there's a costly application, when there's an application for licenses in the form of a lottery, these are things that break the free market. I think that's how they protect these corporate interests. If it was a truly level playing field, no one would be buying those dispo mids. Everybody would be buying from the legacy cultivator who's growing, you know, fucking in aquaponics or in living soil or in perfectly dialed in hydro. I think that criminalization was the cudgel they hit us over the head with before. And now regulation is going to be the cudgel they hit us over the head with this time. What are your thoughts on that? Do we need to make sure? I mean, I don't know. You talk about surviving in the corporate space. I feel like if the regulations were just done a little bit different, we'd have a much better chance.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that there's huge holes and faults in regulations in every state and country that I've looked at. I think it's about working within them and understanding that, you know, you got to stay grateful. Like, you got to be like, oh, okay, well, this sucks, but I am selling weed legally. I am, you know, I'm brokering hundreds of kilos. Like, you got to find the silver lining in what is a cantankerous system. You know, the way it works in Canada is that each provincial body or provincial government runs its own distributorship through the province. So it's regulated very similar to alcohol is in Canada, where each province or similar to a state would have its own regulations and its own distribution network. And every province, save for one, has chosen to insert itself into that distribution network, meaning it's only the source of cannabis for that province is the provincial distribution hub, which is a publicly run company. And we all know how well publicly run companies work.
Right.
So what that's done in Canada is it's hindered any small groups from being able to bring small lot size products to market to really develop a wide product array in the initial days that will draw in new consumers and identify what form factors resonate with consumers. Instead, in Canada, you have to be registered as a distributor in the province, which is a very long process in itself. And then you have to register your SKU, which is a fee, and it takes 60 days. And if you want to change the strain or whatever, that's another 60 days and another fee. And, you know, they get you at every point. But the point I'm trying to make is that in early days in Washington, in early days in California, in some places still, you have people able to create products that with love in their homes, you know, albeit a very clean kitchen, but their kitchen homes, bring those and get those to market. And that was created a product differentiation and a broad array of products that we did not have in the early days. In Canada, in the early days, it was very sterile. The products were limited. And when legalization happened, there was a rush of new consumers that wanted to come to market and try cannabis. And they were sold extremely overpriced cannabis with the promise that it was absolutely premium quality that was mids or lower than
no.
mids.
And that turns them off, and then they kind of ruin the market.
Exactly. So now I have to go and I have to say, I know you spent 65 of your hard-earned dollars on this last ace that you said was high quality and it was garbage, but I need you to take a chance on me.
Jesus.
Because I'm different, and spend another $65. And in Canada, there's no clear packaging. You cannot see or smell the bud. And there is high limitations on the creativity around branding. So it's getting better. But at that point in time, you could line up 5 or 6 or 10 different cannabis brands, take 3 steps back. And if you didn't have laser sharp vision, you wouldn't be able to distinguish between the 3 brands. So we came out of the gate wounded. Like, we could have come out of the gate with a bang, and we came out wounded.
Jesus Christ.
And so, you know, I very publicly say, I think Canada absolutely dropped the ball and really missed a huge opportunity to become a global leader in cannabis. I understand that there was some trepidation around being the first G7 nation to legalize the plant, and, you know, didn't want things to run out of control. But basically what they did was, you know, they succeeded in getting a very small group of old white guys a lot richer and really damaging the optics of our industry for new participants. And I mean, we haven't even addressed it. You know, the legacy hasn't transferred over. You know, the true legacy consumer is still sourcing his product from other places. And that's a form of quality and price. And until you're able to offer more for less than in a legal setting, you're not going to convert those consumers. And the Canadian market doesn't, or the Canadian regulators don't realize the amount of money that this legacy consumer base has in Canada. Like, it is so strong. And the Deloitte and all these accounting firms, they've all gotten these numbers wrong. I've been saying it for years. But, you know, if and when we're really able to successfully convert the legacy consumer over to accessing his product from a recreational store, that's when I'd say, you know, maybe not the work is done, but we can take a break.
I think that there's two sides to look at this from, the pragmatic side and the idealistic side.
Sure.
You take a look at the regulations. Idealistically, they're all fucked up. That's not how you would have done it. That's not how I would have done it. They put in restrictions. They don't treat it like a fucking harmless plant like it is. They do all these things. But at the end of the day, like you said, that's the market we have. Those are the laws on the books. Now, my concern is, as a, you know, somewhat of a student of history, mm-hmm. and maybe somebody can correct me on this. The way I see it, regulations rarely go backwards.
Absolutely.
If we're starting from this starting point, I'm concerned because income tax don't get repealed. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Property taxes don't go down, at least here in Illinois. Mm-hmm. Again, maybe somebody who's smarter than me can write in and send me a brief
history. You're right.
Regulations always fucking get pushed forward. And if we start from this place, I worry that it's just only going to get worse. I'm fighting an uphill battle here going, listen, let the Chads and Brads have their fucking companies. Let them have their money. That ain't going to happen. I ain't going to be able to stop that. That ain't going to happen. I'm trying to get people aware of their home grow laws. I'm trying to get people taking advantage of their home grow laws, getting genetics they need and growing. That's my thing. Now, of course, I'm a proponent of people like you. I'd love to see middle legacy craft cannabis destroy corporate cannabis. But dude, we're both fighting uphill battles is what I'm saying here.
I want everybody to grow their plants. I just know that there's always going to be an industry for other people needing more plants, more dried material. So
exactly.
I mean, that's the industry I chose, but I'm completely with you that everybody listening and everybody everywhere should be growing their plants. And it's such an amazing thing.
I think it's a big enough pie for everybody. They don't see it that way. They simply don't see it that way.
I think that just to speak to what you're saying, because I use that point all the time about you rarely see a government go back and deregulate something that they've highly regulated. And what I believe truly is that it's going to have to be a massive, dramatic shift in government that would affect a change like that. So it wouldn't be, you know, a continuation of whatever status quo regime that, you know, currently under. It would be a dramatic change where somebody says, you know, we're scrapping all that. You guys just go do what you need to do. And that's what I see happening. I also see happening if and when federal legalization takes place in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And there will be a large amount of money that is basically held up in primarily hedge funds that due to their corporate governance are unable to put into the cannabis industry. And once that federal legalization happens, that money, you know, it'll be a fraction of the portfolio, but it'll be quite significant. And outpour into cannabis through SPACs, and which we're kind of slowly seeing. I think that the amount of fervor in that industry will push the Canadian government to loosen regulations around cannabis. Like, we're waiting for our big brother to like say it's okay, and then it's really okay to turn up the music. That's kind of what I feel is happening. And until that happens, we're just going to continue the way we've done it. And the system works. But the issue is that we're really not able as makers to connect with our consumers. Like, we sell to the province and the distro, and that's it. Our whole circle is over. There's no way for us to directly impact the retailer or the end consumer. And that's written into the regulations. You know, you'd be hard pressed to find another industry like that.
Right.
So it's quite difficult. And the branding, you know, like, you cannot evoke any type of lifestyle in a cannabis brand. So that means that if I had a picture of somebody doing yoga and my cannabis brand was centered around yoga and wellness, no, that's a lifestyle.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of limitations to creating strong connections with consumers, which is, you know, something that's important in today's social media driven lifestyle.
It's crazy. Just that last sentence you said, it's crazy how fast this community and industry has transformed.
Yeah.
I mean, social media influencing, NFT having, metaverse. Oh. I mean, can you fucking believe?
I would never have guessed. If you told me all that, I'd tell you you're crazy.
Exactly.
If you told me that 3 years ago, I'd tell you you're crazy.
That's what I feel here, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally agree. And I really do enjoy talking to you. I think we're going to have to do more episodes down the road. We still have some time to wrap this one up, but you are quite a wealth of information, I must say.
Absolutely, man. I'd love to come on and chat this stuff, you know, sharing information. Like, this stuff was passed down to me, and you know, I feel a responsibility to pass it down to people who, you know, people who listen to your podcast. Like, you know, like, that's the thing is, like, people say, like, well, Jameson, are you worried you just share this stuff online and then people have it? I'm like, nobody who doesn't care about the plant is listening to Grow.
Like, true.
You know what I mean? Like, nobody's listening to my show if they're some corporate Chad and Brad.
It's so true.
Drinking scotch. Like, so it's like, yo, I'll give out the information because come find it. Like, if you find it, welcome to it, you know?
100%.
So yeah, like, to me, it's about sharing information and talking. And there's a lot of individuals in our community who are more plant guys who like prefer to be much more around plants than people and don't really have the gift of gab, so to speak. And I love those people and I love connecting with them. And then I love representing them. And you know, I get out and travel and in the front of more people than, you know, a lot of my friends who spend a lot more time in the grow room or the washroom. And for me to be able to represent them, it's an honor.
That's cool. So, I like,
you know,
view
it's,
a lot.
It's something that I don't take lightly.
Well, speaking of getting out there and representing and stuff like that, we spoke about this a little bit at the Regenerative Conference. I'm actually smoking some of that solventless rosin from the Regenerative Conference. Did you? I'm sure. Yeah. You see, you just made a noise. The members have heard me talking about this. That Bicket OG. Holy fuck. Shout out to the guys pressing that Bicket.
That's Terp Wizard. So Terp _Wizard online.
That's what I'm smoking right now.
A lot of that's awesome. He does a lot of stuff for Nick Risden at Lime Rising Farms. And those are two guys you definitely should give a follow to. And I was so stoked in Michigan and the amount of hash that showed up. And I'm a big hash head. So like, I was just like blessed with so much. And it was super impressed with the quality.
You know, I don't know if you have any of that Bicket left. I feel like I'm pretty good at putting words to aromas. This one was actually said about a different strain that I had given a great member friend Scoops, but you know what that Bicket smells like? 2AT.
What?
It smells like a dirty incinerator. It smells like a garbage disposal in your sink that's gone foul.
Yeah.
It smells just like it.
I think it's like a sweet GMO.
Yeah.
And like a lot of people, someone was like, oh, you'll try it, you'll get rid of, you want to like ditch your GMO. But like, it smells like a sweeter GMO. And I haven't grown it, but I was talking to some guys who grew it and they said, oh, if you grow it beside your GMO, you'll get rid of your GMO because apparently she yields way better and stuff. But I really enjoyed it. His slap and tickle was also absolutely incredible. That was one of my favorites over the weekend for sure.
Sweet. Is that a, was that a covert?
It's a GMO to a grape pie.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And yeah, I totally agree. It's like someone stuffed limes down. It has that GMO funk, yeah, and then it has this like citrus fruit kind of.
Totally.
Yeah, it's
totally.
Like it's like limes in an incinerator.
Yeah.
Shit, what was I saying though? Oh, yeah, speaking of getting out there, we talked a little bit about this at the Regenerative Conference. International trade. You just mentioned it. Canada is going to be exporting cannabis. What do you think about countries trading cannabis? Is it going to be sustainable from like a quality assurance standpoint? When will US and Canada be able to trade? What are your thoughts on all of this?
Make no mistake, Canada is exporting cannabis. There are groups who have been licensed since inception who haven't sold a gram in Canada. It's happening. My belief is that Canada historically very much protects its industries,
yes,
especially its struggling industries. And I would say cannabis is a struggling industry and will be for some time. And just due to the amount of infrastructure we built out, as well as the valuations placed on us pre-legalization, a lot of these companies are still living in the shadow of what they were valued at before they ever grew a plant.
That's so crazy.
And so I think that international trade will go forward. I don't know how much cannabis Canada will take in the next 10 years. I think in 20 years, we might see a more like robust, potentially international trade. But even then, I think Canada is going to stay as an exporter and highly tax imports. And then the U.S., once it's federally legal, will be in direct competition with Canadian operators. And I see isolated cannabinoids or crude oil processed in a GMP EU or GMP facility,
yep,
being much more desired than actual flower biomass. I've heard of a couple of deals where guys want to do their own extractions over on the other side of the pond, but like most of the time it's crude oils or further refined extracts. I see that continuing. Any country that decides to turn any type of robust medical program on will need at least 5 to 10 years of building out its own infrastructure before it can support itself. So I think that there will be a need as more and more countries legalize. Like my vision is it's like a wine store where, you know, you go in and it's this from Spain and this from Australia and this from this, but the logistics of dealing with a perishable product that is cannabis flower requires like a lot of logistical management to have an international trade like that. And like, we're still struggling in California or Canada to get fresh product to market nationally. So I think it's, you know, a little big in our britches to think that we're shipping this stuff internationally and then packaging it or repackaging it and maintaining its integrity and then asking the consumer to pay like more, a considerable amount more for it. Like that's got to be some, you know, incredible cannabis brought to me. And you know, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying that we need to, we're crawling, we need to walk, and then we can run.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it will be slow. International will be slow, and it will be dictated on what the U.S. looks like after it opens up, if and when it opens up. Canada will continue to move slowly and quite coyly, or in a coy nature, until it has other G7 countries to kind of stand beside and feel like it's okay.
Yes.
Canada's not a leader, especially with our leadership right now. Like we're very much followers. And so, you know, I commend, I guess, the government for legalizing cannabis, but they haven't really owned it and they had an opportunity to own it and they didn't.
I wonder, there's a couple things that makes me, you know, ponder. First of all, you said the isolates and the crude. Mm-hmm. I 100% agree. 1,000%. You take a look at what Steve's doing, Steve Raisner, mm-hmm, good friend of the show, mm-hmm, with his isolates. That's what cannabis trading is going to look like.
Yep.
I think that,
yeah,
there may be, I don't know, if I don't want to dig in on this one because storage and transportation technology is quite advanced. But I take a look at coffee, which is the other field that I love to work in.
Yeah.
And man, they take coffee super, super seriously, especially with a company that I work with, Purity Coffee. The way that is transported.
And that's where we got to get to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's where we got to get to. That sophistication, 100%.
That is the model that you need to be looking at, man. And specifically the companies doing it right, because there's lots of shitty coffee out there. But you take a look at, everybody knows I work for Purity, healthiest coffee. And they're working to make the healthiest coffee in the world, lab tested, Maximum Antioxidants, mm-hmm. yada, yada, yada. Code River. You guys know, use Code River. But the bottom line is, they're exactly what you guys need to be looking at for preservation of crops and distribution. So organic certification for coffee is actually pretty comprehensive. It needs to be transported mm-hmm. and stored at a certain temperature or humidity, or it's not considered organic. Like that's how deep this sort of thing goes. They nitrogen flush their coffee so that it's not oxidizing as it's traveled. All that being said, I was down in Colombia before pandemic and I had some of the beans on the farm. Mm-hmm. And the local coffee there's something to it, you know, like I'm hesitant to say it's better, but like, mm-hmm. I wonder how well we're going to be able to keep craft cannabis craft if we're shipping it to Israel. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not like dug in on this because there's so much technology out there, but man, something about that coffee on the farm. I wonder how attractive international cannabis is going to even be at the end of the day. I don't know.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I think with extracts, you're able to move them and store them with more impunity. Like
right.
I think that we'll probably see, hashish and things of that nature moved first. But just touching on your isolate comment, you have to remember that like this industry, if we're inside of it, is easily digestible at all points. But if you're an outsider, there's a lot of things that are very hard to digest. And so people look to relate things to that they're familiar to. And so the closer you can get to a commodities market, which is something that people understand internationally, and wheat and different grain and things are traded on, that's how these international traders can wrap their heads around it. And so having something where, you know, an A grade, a B grade, and a C grade distillate defined as certain levels of purity. And that is, there's a market price for that. And that is a fluctuating market price. That's how I see the international trade moving forward in sort of a more clear line of sight, is on isolated or defined or crude extracts or isolation that can be quantified and say, okay, on the market today, we're paying X amount of dollars for this. Once you start getting into flower, you're nuanced and you're now trading grapes for wine. And it's like, well, where were the grapes grown? Like on what side of the hill? Like, are you giving me the shady side? Cause the shady side's sweeter. Like I want that shady side. And then it's like, okay, well the shady side grapes are a little more pricey than the sunny side grapes. And it's like, oh, okay. Well now we're talking nuance. Like that's where you have to get for craft flower. So it's a much, much, much more involved and complex system, but like something that I would love to see happen. But until then, I'll just travel to the places to try the flowers.
That's what I'm saying. I'm excited to see how this goes, man.
Absolutely.
It's we're watching closely north of the border. We're watching overseas, you know, at some of these other markets, and we're just going to have to see how it all plays out. Listen, this was one of the fastest. Like this podcast just flew by in my head. So we got to give you time for plugs. Talk about where we can find you, man. I don't even think you shouted out your brand yet.
I'm a low key background guy. The group that I have come up with, I just recently named the Banyan Tree.
Oh, nice.
The Banyan Tree is a type of fig tree that I grew up around in the Caribbean that has some pretty deep meaning to me. And I think it's a good kind of comparison to what
yeah.
I'm trying to set up.
It's an analogy.
Dropping down from the trees.
Google a banyan tree, everybody. There's a big one in Hawaii. My family lives in Hawaii, and they're the trees that grow out those wide canopies, and then branches drop down to the ground and create more roots. That's so cool that you call it, that your brand is called Banyan Tree.
Yeah, I was gonna go with, you know, something more formal, and I was like, you know what, I think this feels right. So the website's being set up. It's thebanyantree.ca. I couldn't get the .com, maybe one day. And the Instagram is thebanyantree__. And I'm just getting that set up as well. I've actually been super busy and it's taken a back seat, but it will get done. My Instagram is like where you can reach me and I communicate the most with. That's just my first name, Jameson, Jameson_Wellborn, WELBOURN. I'm on LinkedIn. You can also hit me on jameson@thebanyantree.ca. And yeah, I'm available. I like to take time for everyone and you know, see where I can help. And sometimes, you know, just a quick connection for me is a huge thing for somebody else. And I'm happy to do that. So please reach out. And yeah, I'm open to connect.
Hell yeah. You got it, man. Jameson Wellborn, everybody. Round of applause from the audience. Standing ovation.
Hey, man. Thanks so much.
It's coming back to me. Lahaina on Maui.
Oh,
the whole city block is a park under one banyan tree. It's 2 acres in area.
Yeah, biggest trees in the world by mass.
So cool.
It's a really cool. Yeah, it's cool. It's good energy, those trees, in my mind.
That's
good
really
energy.
Cool, man. Go and give them a follow, everybody.
Absolutely.
Check out the banyan tree as that project launches. And you're going to hear more from Jameson back on this show. Thank you all so much for tuning in. That's all for today. I know you enjoyed this podcast. More coming at you each and every Monday. Make sure to check out growcastpodcast.com/membership. Weekly live streams, Growcast TV every Wednesday night. Personalized garden support, prizes, events. So much in membership. You don't even know what you're missing. That's all. One more time, thank you so much, Jameson. This was awesome, bro.
Jordan, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to coming back. It was a great chat with you.
Hell yeah. All right, everybody. We'll see you next time. This is Jameson Wellborn and Jordan River signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day and saying to you all, be safe out there, folks, and grow smarter. That's our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I know you enjoyed this episode with Jameson. He will be back for sure. Yeah, what a great guest, right? Stellar first-time guest. Before we wrap it up, Blue Mats, the ultimate watering system. Code GROWCAST is live again, folks. You only got like 2 weeks to use it. If you've been meaning to grab a Blue Mat, now is the time. Go to sustainablevillage.com. That's our partner, sustainablevillage.com. Code GROWCAST for a limited time. I think it's 15% off, 10% off. 10% off your Blue Mat systems, irrigation stuff only. Code GROWCAST applies. Reach out to Sustainable Village. They will design a system for you. Don't hesitate to contact them, you guys, because they'll tell you exactly how many carrots you need, whether you need the big carrots or small carrots. They really hook you up. Like, Michael is awesome. He sells you only what you need, nothing more. SustainableVillage.com. They got all sorts of other products, but for the remainder of this month, code GROWCAST is 10% off the irrigation. So you only got a few weeks. Jump on that Blue Mat. You will never go back. Install it and then write me and tell me if you like it or not. Because I'm never going back. You're going to love your Blue Mats. Find them at sustainablevillage.com. Use code GROWCAST. Go and grab them. Thank you to Michael Box for reactivating this code. We always appreciate when he does that for us. Blue Mats, baby. Sustainablevillage.com. Code GROWCAST. Woo! That's all, folks. It is mid-March. We've got the Cultivator's Cup April 23rd. Stay tuned for more updates. Colorado in May, LA in June. Mark your calendars. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I appreciate you all so much. Can't wait to meet you in person. I love talking with the listeners and the members, shaking hands, trading seeds, kissing hands, shaking babies. All right, we'll see you at the next one, folks. Have a good one, everyone. Bye-bye.